Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Thanks for hanging out with us today. Again, hit us up on our text and voicemail line. We're doing mailbag tomorrow. So if you want to get your voicemails, your text messages answered, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Again, you guys have been amazing with dropping us voicemails all offseason long, as well as your text messages, and they've been really, really great questions, so continue to do that. One more time, 331-979-1369. Might be even easier for you guys to just add that contact as Locked On Bulls in your phone, so the next time you want to leave us a voicemail or send us a text message, you can just pull out your phone, type in Locked On Bulls, and hit us up there. Matt, how you doing on this Tuesday? We've got a handful of things to get into today. We're creeping closer and closer to NBA action officially. We did get a little taste of basketball this weekend, though, but unfortunately, it came with the USA team losing for the first time ever to Australia. But before we get into that, how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, definitely feeling a little uneasy about the just automatic assumption of winning the FIBA World Cup. I think this USA roster has just been so depleted, not only from people dropping out due to injury, but people dropping out from various reasons, announced or unannounced. Most recently, it was De'Aaron Fox who withdrew from Team USA and said, you know, those reasons are for me and myself alone when asked why he left. So, you know, it's continuing to drop like flies. You mentioned their loss to Australia, which, you know, it's not like losing to a scrub international team. That Australia team does have a lot of talent on it, including NBA talent. You know, Baines, Ingles, Patty Mills lit them up for 30 points. You know, Bogut's on that Australia team. Hey, even Dellavedova scored 2 points in 26 minutes for them. So, I think it's far from a certainty that USA is just going to waltz all the way to winning this World Cup.
Yeah, I think so too. And the nice thing is they did bounce back from this loss against Australia and absolutely scrubbed the floor with Canada the other night. But it's kind of weird timing for at least for us people that are in the United States, because the games are on at such weird times. I was able to watch that first game against Australia. I was working radio, but that other one was at like 5:30 in the morning. So I don't know. I'm hoping that these games are on a little bit earlier or at different times so we can actually get a chance to watch them. But yeah, Team USA, and even listening to Greg Popovich talk for a little bit post game after that Australia loss, you know, he said one thing that I think hit home, especially for a lot of people who know USA basketball, is like LeBron, Melo, Dwight Howard, that big, huge team that they had, what, about 10 years ago now. He's like, fans are used to seeing USA win over the last 12 years, and I think that mindset needs to change because this team is so different. He said, hopefully we can get back on track to the winning ways, but this is certainly a shock. And again, these were just two exhibition games, so it didn't count against them for anything in the tournament, but still a little bit surprising to see the Australia team come out and be as aggressive as they did, and Patty Mills absolutely destroyed Team USA in the fourth quarter. But it was good to see the bounce back against Canada.
Jaylen Brown had a pretty nice game. Very efficient, 19 points on 8 of 11 shooting. You know, the Donovan Mitchell chipped in with 12. Miles Turner had 10. He's sort of essentially been forced to step up and be this team's starting center. The other thing that I find fascinating about these like warm-up exhibition games, did you see the insane amount of love that Brooke Lopez got from that Australian crowd? Like, what's that about?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because they were all cheering for him to get in the game, and Greg Popovich is like, fine, we'll get him in the game for a minute. And then Robin Lopez, classic Robin Lopez, just absolutely roasting his brother on Twitter. He's like, you guys need to be better. You guys wanted him in the game. Are you kidding me? So it was pretty funny back and forth. But yeah, I don't know what the love is for Brooke Lopez in Australia.
Maybe they're, I don't know. Maybe people in Australia like twins. Maybe they like, Brooke isn't as much of a comic book nerd as Rolo is he? I mean,
I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't know what the love is, but it was pretty funny that
all I know is those
Pop, like you said, Pop was like, all right, I guess for whatever reason, these people want to see Brooke Lopez. So, get your butt in there.
So we'll see when like actual tournament play starts, which is this week. See kind of what adjustments that they make. But a lot of these teams are pretty damn good, man. Like, we got a lot of NBA players playing across the board for a lot of different countries. So it should be interesting for fans that are just desperate and dying for basketball to come back. Most of us, if you're living in the U.S., though, are going to have to record these games because they are on at very, very strange hours. So should be a lot of fun over the next 2 weeks to watch these games. But it brought up a bigger question just because of thinking of Greg Popovich and his post-game comments and thinking about Team USA over the last, I don't know, two decades. Do you think that the Team USA now that they've assembled, with all the guys that said that they were good on playing this summer, do you think it sets a precedent for Olympics when it comes up and for the team that's going to be assembled for the Olympics? Do you think some of these star guys are all of a sudden now not going to play in even the biggest stage in the Olympics, or do you think it's still going to come back around and they think of it, this is like, okay, this is the FIBA World Cup. When Olympics comes around, maybe then I will play, talking about like some of the top stars in the NBA? Or do you think that this is now like the precedent? It's going to be a lot of the younger guys, the up and coming studs, and not necessarily the superstars in the NBA.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I honestly don't know the answer. A reasonable assumption would be that even for the big name stars, they would be more willing and more eager to go play in the Olympics because to them that's a bigger deal than just the FIBA World Cup. I mean, to me, that would you agree that they, as a generality, they believe that the Olympics are more important and more worth, you know, going and putting in the time and the effort to represent their country? Because, you know, the FIBA World Cups is just basketball. But when you go and you're part of the Olympic team, you get to be a part of that entire experience. You know, the opening ceremonies with the parade of all the athletes from all the countries and all that stuff. And then, you know, living in and hanging out in the Olympic Village with all of these other international players and, you know, experiencing the entirety of what the Olympics have to offer. Whereas just like FIBA World Cup's just an international basketball tournament, and that's pretty much it. So I would assume that it's more likely that we would see some of the bigger name stars that bowed out of this tournament decide that they do want to go back and play for USA in the Olympics around the corner. And I would add to that, I think if the US team falls short at these FIBA World Cup and doesn't win the whole thing, then, much like it was when, I want to say back, it was 2004, right, when the USA basketball team lost, and then, and it was kind of a weaker roster, and then they were like, well, all right, well, the next big international tournament after this, we, you know, enough of this bullshit, we can't lose again, and then they went and they mopped the floor with everybody at the next tournament. So maybe that happens. Maybe the USA team doesn't win the FIBA World Cup, and then that inspires some of the other big name stars in the NBA to go play for Team USA.
Yeah, that very well could be. I mean, I'm just looking at the roster right now from the 2016, and even that roster, man, was still loaded with stars. You had Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins, DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Durant, Paul George, Draymond Green, Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan,
Kyle Lowry,
Klay Thompson, and then you still had Melo and Harrison Barnes on this team. Obviously, Harrison Barnes is kind of the captain now of this new Team USA team, but I don't know, man. I hope that they decide that some of these guys decided to pass on playing or withdraw themselves this year, would turn around and play in the Olympics in 2020, because that's when the next one's coming up here, just shortly in a year. So to me, I hope they play. But if they don't, we're getting kind of a taste of what this seems to be, the growing trend here. And I mean, all the other countries around the world too are getting better. They're including a lot of their guys from the NBA, and it seems like more guys are willing to go play for their home countries than it is for guys to stay here and play for the U.S. To me, I still think that the U.S. is probably the clear favorite, even if they say take this roster and bring it to the Olympics, but not nearly as a clear-cut favorite as they've been over the last, what, three Olympics or four Olympics. So it'll be interesting, but I mean, they need some star talent for the people to pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And no offense to anyone that is on this USA roster at the FIBA World Cup, but it certainly is not going to draw the eyes and the ratings of a team that has those names that you were rattling off from the most recent Olympic team that had names like KD and Kyrie and Jimmy and DeAndre and all those guys. I mean, who is going to watch these games here in the States? Who's going to watch these games? Who's going to care? I'm certainly going to, you know, keep one eye on the, you know, the Czech team, because I want to watch Satoransky play because he's the only representative we have on our Bulls roster right now. But other than that, like,
I'm
more interested in that than watching this USA team play.
I wonder, is Team USA, like, when the Olympics comes up here in the next year, are people going to be as excited for it? I feel like it's been kind of, like, even when they played, what was it, in 2016, it was exciting, but it was still kind of a downer for a lot of people. I feel like maybe it was because we had just come off the heels of the entire NBA season, the NBA playoffs as well. Do you think that has some type of effect to it, that people might not just pay attention or don't have as much interest in watching basketball from the Olympics? And maybe with a roster that's young like this, I think you're going to get a lot of people that end up tuning out. Like, hardcore NBA fans will still watch, of course. They're going to watch this FIBA World Cup as well. But I'm talking about, like, the casual NBA fans, people that just stick around to watch maybe the playoffs and the finals and like basketball but don't follow it as crazy as, like, you and I feel like that's going to be the growing trend. It's going to be the hardcore fans that are going to definitely watch, and maybe some of these fringe casual fans are going to say, you know what, LeBron, KD, Anthony Davis, James Harden, Steph Curry, none of these guys are playing in there. All right, maybe I'll watch the highlights, but I'm not going to tune in to sit and watch an entire game.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it would help define who you are and how addicted you are to basketball. I mean, like you said, especially considering that the FIBA World Cup happens, you know, you're gearing up for it and playing exhibition games in August, and then you play the tournament in September. Those are the two most dry, brutally dull months of what is otherwise a damn near 365-day sport in this country. Like, NBA basketball, even after the finals end, you have the draft, you have free agency, you have all that drama, and then it's just the back end of summer and early fall before training camp starts that fans are starved for content. So because the FIBA World Cup happens to, you know, be in that, you know, it's no coincidence that is where this falls on the schedule. If you are a diehard fan and are, you know, just fiending for hoops and don't care as much about, you know, Major League Baseball swinging into the postseason or the NFL getting underway, and all you want is basketball, then yeah, you'll watch. But I think the casual fan, as you were saying, because MLB playoffs are getting close and because NFL football is about to start, like, a fan who is as much a football and baseball fan as basketball fan, who would choose watching a USA roster in a tournament that doesn't really mean a whole lot over, an MLB playoff game or an NFL regular season game? Because I don't think that's, a very long list of fans. It's only the true devout hoops and nothing else kind of fans.
It's true. So we'll have to find out. Maybe this young team can make a statement here and win the FIBA World Cup, and maybe that'll put more eyes on this team as well. So interesting. But that tournament kicks off August 31st, so we're looking at less than a week from now. So what is that? Friday is the 31st, maybe? Sunday?
Let's see. I think Saturday is the 31st.
Saturday is the 31st, so that's the kickoff of all of the games. That's the initial kickoff. They've been playing these exhibition games over the last about 10 days or so. But yeah, interesting comments as well from Greg Popovich. So if you guys want to listen to that, it's over at the NBL official Twitter page from his post-game comments. So it was interesting to listen to what he had to say. But let's switch gears here, Matt. We have an email coming all the way from Finland that we kind of wanted to address. It was sent to LockedOnPodcast@gmail.com, which is like our main site. That's the place you can contact to get a hold of anybody at the Locked On Podcast Network. So it was sent from David Locke, who owns the podcast network. Shout out to David Locke. Forwarded to us because it was an email all the way from Finland talking about the Bulls. If you want to hit us up, guys, and you're international and you can't hit us up on our text and voicemail line, you can reach us at Twitter at Locked On Bulls at Jordan C. Malley or at Bulls underscore Peck, or you can email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. But Matt, we've got this email. You want to go ahead and just read it, and we're going to talk about some of the questions as well that he has.
Yeah, for sure. So this is an email that we got from Tony in Finland. Hey guys, Tony from Finland. Really love your show. Always waiting forward for my trips to work and back. A couple of comments. In the long run, I don't think Zach is the best mate, quote unquote, with Lowry. Zach is too selfish and a poor passer. He does not move the ball at all. With Lowry, Porter, and Wendell, I really want to see more what effects Thomas Satoransky can have. Because of this, I really want the coaching staff to make at least some rotation moves. Zach or Lowry to the bench a little bit earlier, and then Zach or Lowry back 3 to 4 minutes earlier than the other one. As a second note, I would not give up on Chris, even though the point guard moves are against him. He was good with pick and pop plays with Lowry, and I think Lowry played pretty well with Chris in Lowry's rookie season. Of course, the shooting and confidence is an issue. He is still young. However, I think Chris should come off the bench before this newcomer. I assume he means Coby White, the rookie draft pick. I know that Lowry comes back in great shape based on the pictures we've seen. Hopefully everyone is healthy when the season starts. I think they have a chance to fight for the 7th and 8th seeds. Thanks, Tony in Espoo, Finland. Thanks for checking in, Tony, and mad love to all of our listeners in Finland.
Appreciate everybody out there in Finland. Let's start with the Chris Dunn stuff, and then let's go backwards, and then let's talk a little bit about Carter Lowry and the starting five. For Chris Dunn, I think the biggest thing this year, and you know, we've kind of exhausted it this summer, and there isn't much to talk about whether he's going to get traded or not, but I still think if he has a decent training camp, Matt, I think Jim Boylan's going to start him. I think the idea here is to either get him to mesh with some of these guys finally in a full healthy season, or stick him out there to try to increase his trade value. I mean, they've got a bunch of point guards on this roster, and I understand they just signed Thomas Satoransky to a decent chunk of money, and you guys want to see him in the starting rotation. But still, I think if Chris Dunn has a decent training camp, he might be the starting guard. And that's not necessarily telling you that he's going to get the bulk of the minutes as far as the point guard position goes, but I think he would end up being the starter. For him, I think it's all about competence too. I think it really is. Last year, we saw the waves that came. When he had good games, kind of built off of that. And when bad stretches came, he was just god-awful. So for him, I think it's staying healthy and having his confidence be built up. And I don't know if that's going to be through Jim Boylan, if Jim Boylan can untap some of that and be his motivator, or if there's somebody on this roster that can help be his motivator. But I think there's a lot for him to prove this season. And believe me, he hears what fans are saying about him, wanting him traded, don't want him part of this core anymore. He definitely hears that, and I don't know what kind of effect that's going to have, especially if Chris Dunn plays well. Like, that's a situation we haven't talked about either, is what happens if Chris Dunn turns it around and all of a sudden he's the player we expected him to be this season. When we get to February, when we're through 45, 50, 60 games, and all of a sudden he looks like a really, really decent point guard, what happens then? Do you still trade him? Does he still have weird feelings about the fan base and wanting him out before? How is that dynamic going to go? I think there's a lot of question marks surrounding Chris Dunn going into this season.
Yeah, and I think we have something in our mailbox recently asking that very question about what if Dunn plays well, do they still try and trade him at the deadline? We can get to that in our mailbag later this week. But to the original hypothetical that Tony brings up about Chris Dunn not giving up on him You know, the fact that he played well with Lowry, played well off of Lowry at times. I agree with Tony. I wouldn't expect Kobe White to be ahead of Chris Dunn in the rotation if the plan is to give one more chance to Chris Dunn, or in another world or another way, play Chris Dunn to try to increase his currently zero trade value. And so that, to me, is where I think you and I disagree a little bit, Jordan. I don't think Chris Dunn is going to start. I don't think, even if given the opportunity to, quote-unquote, win the job in training camp, that he is going to win the job. I think the Bulls signed Satoransky to be their starter, knowing that he is a high-efficiency, low-usage percentage point guard who can make Otto, Lowry, Zach, and Wendell the focal points of that offense and can knock down a shot when the shot is presented to him. Everything about Satoransky's game points to him being this team's starter, not even mentioning the fact that LaVine and Dunn had no chemistry when they shared the floor over the past season and a half. I think the other thing that you have to think about is that if they are, in fact, trying to raise Chris Dunn's trade value because they don't want to re-sign him as his rookie deal is expiring, but they see that Satoransky is the better option to start, Dunn might look better playing as a backup against second units. They might have better luck increasing Dunn's trade value, which again at the moment is zilch, if he goes out there and proves himself and can prove himself to be a worthy, capable, if not beyond capable, backup point guard in this league, playing against second units. I think that's the best case scenario for the Bulls. If they want, instead of just burying him on, you know, burying him at the back end of the rotation and not playing him and like hoping somebody's willing to just take a flyer on him at the deadline, if they really do want to build up his minutes to build up his trade value, that won't happen as a starter. That'll happen as a backup guard, because most people believe that that is his predetermined role. That is the role he's destined to play in the NBA.
The one I agree with what you're saying, definitely. Like, I think he could dominate against second units and not have as much pressure as he would as being the starter, because there's going to be a lot of pressure in these first 30, 35 games, I feel like. The Bulls need to get out to a hot start. If they end up struggling and stammering, fans are going to be restless. And they're going to be talking about, wow, here we go again, year three, same outcome. And I don't know if that's going to add extra pressure to Chris Dunn or not, but I agree with you. I think for him to get back to that confidence level he was the first year he was with the Bulls, maybe it is coming off with the second unit. My only question to you, and I've said this multiple times, that I don't think being the starter necessarily makes you any worse or any better than any other guy. It's really about how many minutes you're getting, when are you playing, and are you playing in the crucial parts of the game, like closing out. I think closing out a game is far more important than starting a game, but to a player it's a little bit different. How do you think that affects his trade value, though, if the Bulls decide, you know what, we're going to go with Satoransky, he's going to be our starter, and we're going to bring Chris Dunn off the bench, and he's going to play alongside one of these other guards, either Archie Diakono, Harrison, or Kobe White, or even Denzel Valentine, too, in that second unit. How do you think that's perceived, at least at the start of the year, regardless of how Chris Dunn plays coming off the bench?
I mean, I think it's their most realistic route to take to increase his trade value, which right now...
Do you think initially, though, it would make teams think, okay, there's a reason why they're sitting him and they're putting him in the second unit? Maybe, you know, he already has basically zero trade value. So do you think teams then will just completely ignore the idea of maybe keeping an eye on him? Or do you think that doesn't really affect him at this point?
No, I think most, you know, most executives and most scouts that would maybe be considering Dunn for their franchise would see what the Bulls are doing as showcasing his talents in the role that many believe he is meant to play at this level, which is not that of a starting guard, but that of a backup guard. I think most people have come to feel that way about Chris Dunn. And, you know, he's dealt with injuries and all that stuff. He's had a tough time staying on the court. But when on the court, I think a lot of people think he projects to be a backup guard in this league. So the Bulls allowing him to showcase his abilities and perhaps even being an above average, you know, plus player for the team running the second unit, to me, that increases his trade value more than trying to shoehorn him into a starting job that he has never proven to be comfortable with.
It's a fair point. I think I'm kind of with you, but it's going to be a really interesting trading camp. I wonder what happens. And, you know, we heard Jim Boylan a couple of months ago, and this could have just been, you know, saying this because he was on TV, but he said they had their starting unit set. Obviously, things can change in training camp. Not only injuries, but guys playing better than expected could change some of this up, but very curious to see what happens there. I want to hit on his question, though, his comment about Zach LaVine not being the best pairing with Lauri Markkanen, and also talking a little bit about rotations. The one thing on the rotations, Matt, is I think a significant improvement we're going to see this year compared to last year, even in the first year, is those third quarters. Think about all the third quarters that the Bulls played absolutely terrible in last year. I think they were one of the worst teams as far as offense and defensive rating goes and net rating goes in the third quarter. They were god-awful because a lot of times Jim Boylan was starting with his second unit, and at that point, the second unit was garbage. A lot of the guys were injured and forced to either be in the starting rotation, and it made guys have to step up. And you were playing guys like Antonio Blakeney and... God, I don't even know who else was playing in that second unit, but that third quarter was god-awful. I think we're going to see a significant improvement in third quarter, the way that the Bulls come out at the second half, than we did the last 2 years. So I'm a little excited for that. What do you think about his idea, though, of kind of staggering these rotations and bringing Zach and Lowry back into the game once they come off the floor for the first time, how that kind of affects the Bulls' rotations and what they should do ultimately with Zach and Lowry?
I think it's certainly a viable idea to stagger those guys in their minutes. I think you also might see a staggering of, you know, as we were just talking about Dunn, like staggering him and LaVine. You're probably also going to see some staggering where the Bulls send Lowry to play the five, to, you know, sort of play around with that idea of a lineup. So staggering Lowry and Wendell. There are a lot of unanswered questions as to how Boylan is going to approach that rotation. What basically the bottom line is, figure out the best ways to make Lowry and Lowry and LaVine both, you know, multiple threat 20 plus points per game scorers. Because we all know the role that Otto is going to play. I think a lot of us hopefully know the role that Satoransky is going to play as mainly distributing guard in that starting unit. And we all know the role that Wendell is going to play. Hopefully he has a little bit more opportunity on the offensive end this upcoming season as opposed to his rookie year, but it's going to be a lot of defense, blocking shots, you know, roll to the rim when he can. Maybe he expands upon, you know, the confidence within his outside shot this season. But to me, the most important thing about, you know, the Lowry and LaVine combo is making sure that they each get their looks. So if that means staggering them at times, then do that. But again, there have been such small sample sizes of these guys being healthy and playing on the court together. And February was great, right? When they were both balling out and Otto had arrived and spaced everything out a little bit more and everything was just fluid. The Bulls had one of the best offensive ratings in the league that month. How does Boylan make that work over an entire 82-game schedule? That's what we have to find out.
I think you hit it right there. Is we don't really have a great idea or a great sample size of how Zach and Lowry play together because it's really we got half a season last year and in half a season, I think, is being kind of generous. Think about March, too, where the amount of games Zach LaVine sat out or Lowry didn't play or both of them played in restricted minutes. I think that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on and hopefully, knock on wood, they all stay healthy, too. So we actually get a decent sample size this year. The one thing to watch, though, is how Jim Boylan is going to use his rotations if, say, Carter ends up in foul trouble early on in the season. That's something that I think Carter's got to work on, and that's hopefully something he worked on in the offseason. But I think that can throw a wrench into Jim Boylan's plans, too, as far as his rotation goes. If Carter picks up two or three fouls in that first half, then you really got to mix and match. Good thing you do have Thaddeus Young and you have Luke Kornet, too, to kind of supplement that. But still, I could see units where if Lowry's really having trouble on the defensive side of the ball, they pull him out, keep Carter in the game, and maybe bring in Thaddeus Young or Luke Kornet. and kind of break that up a little bit. But again, I don't know if I would consider to. The one thing that I will disagree here with about Zach LaVine's game is that Zach LaVine is selfish and a poor passer. I think he's got the basketball IQ. I do think he makes some mistakes at times, and those can kind of snowball. We've seen that in games in the past. I go back to that Knicks game in overtime. It was early on in the season where neither of those teams wanted the ball. They were turning the ball left and right over in overtime. But those little key crucial plays where Zach LaVine does end up with turnovers, I think does hurt him. So I'd like to see an improvement there, but most of all, I don't think he is a selfish player, man. And you and I have had this argument multiple times, and both have been on the same side to other Bulls fans who think he's a selfish player. I really, really, really don't think Zach LaVine's a selfish player.
I don't think he's a selfish player. I think he's a player who was not gifted with incredible court vision, and that's something that he needs to continue to work on. Because there were times where you would see a wide-open Markkanen or a Markkanen that had a mismatch or something that was on the court that was visible to the eye of even a fan who knows, you know, fairly confidently what spacing on a court looks like and what mismatch and being able to spot mismatches. And certain things like that where you would watch LaVine kind of get tunnel vision at times and say, ah, man, like LaVine missed one there. That's not the same thing as being a selfish player who just wants to shoot a bunch. We did see LaVine struggle with an increased, you know, turnover percentage this season, this past season, being asked to handle the ball so much. You know, he had averaged around 1.9, 1.8 turnovers per game over his previous, you know, three seasons, one with the Bulls and then the previous two with Minnesota. That jumped to 3.4 last season. But it was because he was handling the ball a lot. He also saw his assists per game jump from hovering around 3 flat over those previous three seasons to 4.5 assists per game this past season. So, again, it's all about trying to just wrangle in those turnovers, keep that turnover percentage down. He had a 14.2 turnover percentage last season. That's not great. And it, you know, it was paired with his over 30 usage percentage. So, a player with that significant usage percentage and also, you know, all the ball handling he was doing, you're going to get those bad games. And like some of it was nights where, you know, and that certainly upped his season average, where he had like 7, 8, 9, 10 turnovers, and he's got to eliminate that. But again, I think part of that is court vision, and I don't think any of it is him being a selfish player.
Yeah, and I think the thing that maybe is getting kind of confused and making him seem like a selfish player is the fact that he needs the ball in his hands to score. Like, he has to have the ball, and he has to do it on the dribble, and he does do a lot of driving to the basket. That's what we saw last year. A big part of what Jim Boylan wanted to do with his game is have him be sent to the basket and getting there or knocking down threes. Nothing in the mid-range game. So when you do that, it reminds me a little bit of James Harden, where James Harden absolutely needs the ball in his hands to score. It's harder for him to score off the ball than it is on. For Zach LaVine, I think it's kind of the same. Although I will say, I know we don't buy too much into workout videos or anything like that. Did you see Zach LaVine balling out, though, in a pickup game maybe about a week ago? The video was tweeted out. I forgot who tweeted it out, but I did see it. And
yeah.
He was...
I saw it.
He had a... I mean, those catch and shoot threes... He was knocking him down from pretty damn far away, too. So he did look really, really good. Moves looked really good as well. Yeah. So maybe that's part of the reason is people think he's a selfish player because he has the ball in his hands and drives to the basket. And that's one of the main ways he's able to score. He uses his athleticism more than he does his passing ability to try to kind of overcome some of those difficulties he's has with passing. But I think now in this third year with a bunch of shooters around him, I think it's only going to make things easier for him.
Yeah, and I mean... Just to, again, go back to, I know, you know, we harp on it a lot, but it's because we're a bad team looking for optimism coming into the third year of a rebuild. But in that month of February, when the Bulls had a competent offense and looked like a good team, at least on the offensive end, LaVine was playing well, Markkanen was playing well, Otto had arrived in the trade. In that month, in those 10 February games, when LaVine was averaging 24.5 points per game, he was also averaging 5.8 assists. And in that month, his usage percentage dropped. On the season, he averaged just over 30, like 30.1. In the month of February, when the Bulls were a high-efficiency offense, His usage percentage was only 26.8. So his usage percentage went down, and his assists were like 1.3 higher than his season average. That month, with the spacing that Otto provided, with Markkanen balling out the way that we want to see him play over the course of an entire season, Zach can be a guy who does handle the ball a considerable amount, scores and is your primary ball scorer on a nightly basis, but can also be a, you know, close to six, maybe even seven assists a night, a game kind of player. That can be the case. It's just having all the pieces there and healthy and running a system that works.
It's going to be, it's kind of difficult for us to talk about how either of these guys are going to play well together and what Zach LaVine is going to be alongside these shooters. What I can say is if you were okay with his game last year or you liked what you saw last year, I think you're only going to be happier with what you see this year. Consider all the shooters he's going to have around him. I mean, we talked about November for Zach LaVine, where it was just the dude probably had his worst month, but didn't have anybody around him to help him score. So any of that, I think if you were okay with his game last year, you're going to be pleasantly surprised this year. One last thing to kind of just wrap this email up, Matt. I went back and looked at the defensive rating, just third quarters in general. Under Jim Boylan, the Bulls had a defensive rating in the third quarter of 120 last year. That was third worst in the NBA behind just the Cavs at 120.1. They were 29th, and the Wizards at 120.8. Jim Boylan overall defensive rating in, this is 47 games, so it didn't count the last about 2 weeks of the season, but still 113.5 put them at 28th in defensive rating last year. So I think you're going to see major improvements in that area. But also, too, I think I'm very excited to see what they do with their third quarters, because that second unit is a lot better now. Just on paper, just looking at it from the G Leaguers that were filling in the ends of the roster, I think this is going to be a lot better. And that's the biggest thing, man. They can't get down on 10-0 runs or 12-4 runs straight out of that second half. So that's the biggest thing that I take away from this email. But I would say Zach LaVine, not a selfish player. Be excited for what you're going to see this year, and I think him and Lowry will have some type of chemistry or connection, because if they don't, then the Bulls have a serious, serious problem on their hands.
Yeah, you know, and how many times have we said that the injuries have, you know, been a real hindrance on seeing what this young core looks like and what this rebuild is capable of. So, I mean, that's why it's such a huge element to what's going to happen this year, is if these players, Lowry, LaVine, Wendell, everybody who missed time for injuries last season, stays healthy and they actually get close to a full season of a look at what these guys can be playing together. So, I mean, people can have a wide variety of what their level of optimism is if the team does stay healthy. Some people think if this team stays healthy, they can win well over 40 games. I think that's a bit optimistic, but I think that they can certainly be pushing 35 wins if they stay healthy. But it's all about Boylan and his coaching staff figuring out what works the right way, getting the guys to buy in, and keeping the guys on the floor.
All right, so I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. There's a topic we didn't get to, but we'll get to on later in this week. Tomorrow, we're going to do mailbags, so hit us up with your voicemails and your text messages, 331-979-1369. It can be Bulls questions, can be your favorite United Center memory, can be any NBA-related questions. You want to talk a little bit about the FIBA World Cup. Anything you've got for us, drop us your voicemails at 331-979-1369 or your text messages there. You can tweet at us at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Again, subscribe to Locked On Bulls. I know a lot of you that are daily listeners with us throughout this entire offseason are already subscribed to the show and appreciate you so much. But if you're not and you're just kind of hanging out, listening to certain episodes, we'd appreciate if you go ahead and subscribe on your favorite platform, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere else you get your podcasts, we are sure to be there. So make sure you hit that subscribe button so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with Mailbag. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.